This is the State of Things live from Greensboro. I'm Frank Stacio. Indigenous Peoples Day reimagines Columbus Day to celebrate the other side of the European discovery. These festivities advance concrete political causes, such as the reestablishment of land rights in the Piedmont. The Okinoche Band of the Saponi Nation trace their lineage to a confederacy of Siouan language groups that historically managed land in modern-day North Carolina and Virginia. Organizers from the Okinoche Band partnered with community members in the surrounding area to host Alamance County's first-ever Indigenous Peoples Day. It's an event next Monday evening at the Haw River Ballroom in Saxapaw. And to give us a preview of the event, two organizers are with us now, Ione Jeffries and Crystal Cavalier-Keck. Welcome to the State of Things.
Thank you
for having us.
Ione Jeffries is a musician and artist based in Durham. Crystal Cavalier-Keck is president of the North Carolina Democratic Party Native American Caucus. So, Ione, let me start with you and talk about this event that we're talking about, Indigenous Peoples Day, more than just a party. Tell us more about it.
For sure. It's preservation of who we are on land that historically is ours or that our family has been on for hundreds of years, pre-colonization, of course. And through us being dismantled in so many ways, we're now reclaiming the land that is ours, the soil that our family has trampled upon. We want to highlight that and invite the community to come out and be a part of it with us to learn about who we are and the way that we live.
And Crystal, the who we are, the we in this has been expanded. We're not just talking about the Okinoche and Saponi. We've included other bands in this celebration, right?
Yep, that's right. So it's Okinoche Band of the Saponi Nation.
Okinoche, yeah.
This is an Indigenous Peoples Day for everybody. We want people from all over the state, you know, other states if you're here, to come and support this with us. The Culture Meal Lab, Saxapaw Hall People's Justice, and my group, the 501c3 Saponi Stickball, we are hosting this event. And it is open, like the professor was saying earlier, we are on Saponi lands, but a lot of the tribes that lived here, such as the Eno, the Sisapahal, the Tuscarora, there's a lot of intermixing of those tribes and intermarrying. And we were trades path people, so we kind of like moved around. So you're right.
I only talk about this blending and the complexity of it because I know that you've spoken about, you know, the ways in which communities aren't always wanting to embrace one part of their history or another.
For sure. Historically, of course, like our families were, and I say families, all of us together, but then individually as well, our nuclear families rather. We have needed to hide our identities for so long because certain permissions were not permissible to us or to our tribes here. We're not federally recognized or state recognized, which comes with its own battles as well. So I believe like that definitely adds to it. It makes me personally, coming from a background of multi-cultures, I'm Jamaican and Native American, so I've had to find a way to really like place my identity at different times and feeling like, when I'm with my Jamaican family, I'm not enough of a Jamaican woman, or when I'm with my Native family, I'm not enough of a Native woman. So I've had to really navigate that throughout my life. And it's only recently that I've come to grips like, I can be both of these at the same time without having to choose, because it's me. It's who I am completely.
Is it a conversation, though, that you have in your family?
Yes, it is. Something that we've had many discussions about within our tribe, and then also just with at home with my mom and my father. And then, like, being raised in that type of family dynamic, it was hard for me because I'm my only sibling that is both. Everyone else is just Native American. So yeah, it's complex for sure.
Well, Crystal, talk about your experience with Native identity and visibility growing up in Alamance County.
Okay, so I was born in Alamance County. I went to school at Eastern Alamance. And so in our community, we always knew we were American Indians, Native Americans, but we could not talk about it. My grandparents, we live on the land that my grandparents have had in their family for over 200 years. And so in order to keep our people alive, we had to hide in the community. So whether we had to hide with white communities or we had to hide with the black communities, we had to hide out because we did not want to have our government the government take our land, and we did not want to be shipped off to boarding schools. And so growing up, it was very hard. I had a huge cultural identity. When I would go to school, I was too dark to be white, and I was too light to be black. And it was a lot of pressure. And I was struggling with that. And when people would ask me what I was, I would just say, you know, I'm mixed, I'm other. You know, I didn't feel like I needed to pick one or the other. And recently I've come to grips, and I would say, which grandmother is unworthy of me choosing? So I'm going to honor both. Well, actually three, because I'm triracial. So I'm going to honor all three of my relatives, because that's what they will want me to do, because they had to hide in these communities to survive. And that's why I'm here today. That's why our people have existed.
Yeah. Well, talk about I'll stay with you for a minute, Crystal, the importance of an event like this in Alamance County.
So Alamance County is rich. Like the professor was saying, it is a rich history. We want the people in Alamance County to know that we're still here. You know, we don't live in wigwams. We live in brick houses just like the rest of you. We are here. We need to rally our people together, because there's people today who are still afraid to admit that they're Native American. Either they're embarrassed by it because the black communities have shunned them for claiming they're Native Americans, or either the white communities are shamed by it because they don't want to be an Indian. Because back in the day, people would say these hot topics like Indians are dirty. We don't want to be a dirty Indian. And I mean, that's a stigma that is still today. And we are here to show that we are racially diverse, and we're still here, and we are welcoming, because we want you guys to learn about your native history and to protect the land that was stolen from us. We want you guys to help us protect that land too.
Talk more about that, because a claim to land ownership and a claim to land is also part of the celebration, right?
That's right. So claiming the land, back with the explorer that was coming through, the claim to our land, we just have to be able to, land is a hot commodity, right? So if you have the land, you have the money, right? And it's almost a paper genocide. So when the census was coming through, they would claim, put us down as being mulatto, or they would put us down as being colored or Negro, or, you know, whatever they wanted to do so they could take our land. And when you have land like that, you have power, just like the professor was saying before. And so, no, we're not going to take this anymore. You know, we want to claim our lands back, our water back, because everything is related.
Yes, it is.
Talk about the paradox of this, though. We all harbor perhaps an infantile utopian vision of someday, you know, all this goes away. But we live in a world, we absolutely know, where there is social hierarchy based on race, based on phenotype. And we've seen it flare up now, the flare up of white supremacy. So it's very clear we have not escaped this by any means. Things may be getting worse. On the other hand, are we at a moment where this is where we want to be? And if so, this is the complexity for me, the paradox. If you embrace an identity, aren't you reinforcing what the people in power would love to have? Because this hierarchy then keeps you from organizing.
No, I don't think if you embrace your cultural identity, you are not embracing white supremacism, or you're trying to help like the neo-Nazis down there in the southern part of Alamance County or in Pelham with the KKK. You know, we are here to say, you know what, if you guys look in your DNA or you go back in your family tree, are you afraid of what's going to come out? Because I guarantee if you live here in the state, you are mixed with something. So, you know, don't be coming pulling these sheets back. Because you're not going to want to see what's there. So I'm very strongly opposed to the white supremacy. And I think that they're just, it's all fear-based.
Yeah.
And to touch on what both of you just said, or in the statement that you had first led with, it is definitely more challenging. The difficulty rises because when you identify as a Native American, it automatically gives people this perception of who you are and the lifestyle that you lead. When, like you said, we live in regular houses, we attend regular schools. Like, yes, we have a tribal council, and yes, we have tribal land, we have this reservation, but at the same time, we live our lives like every other US citizen. But as soon as you identify as such, even on paper, there's a stigma that follows that. And I've experienced that a lot within the even job searching. If I put down that I am Native American, I'm less likely to get a call back than if I put down that I'm black. That's insane to think about, because you would think that people will want to have some type of diversity or inclusivity within whatever company or businesses that they have, and they actually don't because of the stigma that comes with it. Oh, if you're Native American, maybe you do not perceive things the same way, or maybe your intelligence is not the same as somebody who would identify as Black or as white. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no.
Like, we fought in that gray area all the time.
Yeah. And I think you put your finger on it, too, in the power of embracing a particular cultural identity, because the hierarchy depends on, right, that the stereotype. Yeah. I have to maintain the stereotypes, which are false. And to the extent that I can make people believe what is not true about other groups, then I can reinforce the hierarchy. It all goes away when I tell the truth about each group and realize there is no hierarchy here. And so you have to take the dangerous step of embracing the identity first in order to break down the stereotype. And I think it's powerful stuff. And also in art and culture, you're a singer. Ione, how does this sort of multicultural blended culture influence your art, or does it?
It does, all the way. So storytelling is the way that we preserve our history, and it's the way that we get to pass along the torch within our communities. And I've developed a way of, and like, using that to fuel whatever music I create. And as a songwriter, it's very important for me to tell our history through song, because there are going to be people who are listening who may not be Native American and may not ever have any type of relation to a Native person. But if I can slide two bars in that can make someone like, oh, like, it may be even the first time you're not going to hear it, right? But the third or fourth time you're listening to it, you're going to hear me mentioning our tribe. You're going to hear me mentioning something about our history. And for me, that's the most important thing, is to make sure that I'm passing that along to my younger siblings, to my children. I don't have children yet, but when I do, and then also to any of the other listeners who don't know anything about Native culture.
And you also speak and sing in the Tutelo language, is that right?
Yes, I speak loosely, but I do sing in Tutelo, yes. All right. I actually have a song if y'all would want to hear it. Y'all want to hear it?
Yeah.
I'm actually going to read the translation first so that, not that you'll understand it, though I do want you to understand like the words I'm saying and what is coming up with it. So the song is titled Makchi, which is performed by Ulali, and what's
Pure Faye.
Yes,
she wrote
she's
that,
the composer.
Yeah. And Lawrence Dunmore translated it.
Yes, and Lawrence Dunmore is our cousin. Yeah. I'm part of the Okanichi tribe as well. So it translates to, 100 years have passed, yet I hear the distant beat of my father's drum. His beat I feel within my heart. The drum shall beat, so my heart shall beat, and I shall live 1,000 years. Makchi tamboi a pikiri. Makchi tamboi kan spewa ebe. Makchi tamboi a pikiri. Makchi tamboi kan spewa ebe ma pewa. Hokaye mong taon tani kaitae giwe meitai nakaya yamuni e wajitse nakaya yamuni e wajitse nakaya yamuni e wajitse.
Ione Jeffries, who will be participating in Alamance County's first ever Indigenous Peoples Day next Monday at the Haw River Ballroom, along with Crystal Cavalier Keck, who is also with us today. Tell us more. That's a beautiful song. Tell me about the melody then. Where does that come from?
So we largely base a lot of our music in drum patterns, which the men traditionally play, and it's an honor to women. A lot of Native societies or Native communities are very matriarchal in our action and the way that we carry out our traditions. So it's an honoring song to our ancestry, where we come from and where we're going.
Beautiful stuff. Yeah. I want to thank you both for being on our program. Crystal Cavalier Keck is the president of North Carolina Democratic Party Native American Caucus. And also Ione Jeffries is with us here, who is a musician, and they're both organizers and members of the Okanichi Band of the Saponi Nation. Alamance County's first ever Indigenous Peoples Day is next Monday at the Haw River Ballroom in Saxapahaw, and you can find out all that information at our website, stateofthings.org. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
And our music today, thanks to Barry Gray. He is hosting the monthly songwriter sessions in association with the Bro Sessions with Bruce Pioff and Abigail Dowd and Chris Myers this Sunday from 4 to 6. Going to be right here at the Upstage Cabaret in Greensboro. And on Friday, you can catch him playing at a benefit from 5 to 9 at Shiloh Presbyterian Church in Burlington. His record is called Footsteps, and you can find out more at our website, stateofthings.org. You'll hear him in just a moment, but first, I need to tell you that The State of Things is produced by Anita Rao, Laura Pelliser, Dana Terry, Amanda Magnus, and Grant Hall of Mormon. Robin Copley is technical director. Al Wadarski also engineered the show today. Josie Taras is our intern. North Carolina Public Radio is a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stasio. Once again, Barry Gray.
I'm in the oak, the children climb. Dusty baseball fields of my summertime. Fescue grass on my father's lawn. I'll still be here long after I'm gone. Initials carved in the basement stairs. Leave generations wondering just who's been there. I'm no Bob Dylan blowing in the wind, but my footsteps is living in the minds of my friends. Well, you can see me living in the gleam of the eyes of the people who knew me from days gone.